Vedas are Sabda Brahma. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas, and because they assimilate the Vedic conclusions, they are also to be considered the Vedas personified. The Brahmanas are situated in the supreme transcendental mode of nature, Sattva-gun. Because of this, they are fixed in mind control, Sama, sense control, Dhamma, and truthfulness, Satta. They describe the Vedas in their original sense, and out of mercy, anugraha, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all conditioned souls. They practice penance, tapasya, and tolerance, titiksha. And they realize the position of the living entity and the Supreme Lord, anubhava. These are the eight qualifications of the Brahmanas. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, this is a true description of a Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who has assimilated the Vedic conclusions by practicing mind and sense control. He speaks the truth, the true versions of all the Vedas, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Vedaischa sarvai ahameva vedda. By studying all the Vedas, one should come to understand the transcendental position of Lord Sri Krishna. One who actually assimilated the essence of the Vedas can preach the truth. He is compassionate to conditioned souls who are suffering in the threefold miseries of this conditioned world due to their not being Krishna conscious. A Brahman should take pity on the people and preach Krishna consciousness in order to elevate them. Sri Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally descends into this universe from the spiritual kingdom to teach conditioned souls about the values of spiritual life. He tries to induce them to surrender unto Him. Similarly, the Brahmanas do the same thing. After assimilating the Vedic instructions, they assist the Supreme Lord in His endeavor to deliver conditioned souls. The Brahmanas are very dear to the Supreme Lord due to their high sattva-guna qualities, and they also engage in welfare activities for all conditioned souls in the material world. The Vedas, I'm repeating the translation, the Vedas are my eternal transcendental sound incarnation. Therefore, the Vedas are Sabda Brahma. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas, and because they assimilate the Vedic conclusion, they are also to be considered the Vedas personified. The Brahmanas are situated in the supreme transcendental mode of nature, sattva guna. Because of this, they are fixed in mind control, sense control, and truthfulness. They describe the Vedas in their original sense, and out of mercy, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all conditioned souls. They practice penance and tolerance, and they realize the position of the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These are the eight qualifications of the Brahmanas. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. So here we can see that the position of a Brahmana is not just a rubber stamp. It is neither a consideration of birth, nor it is a consideration of certain rituals. It is a matter of elevation on the spiritual platform. Or it is a matter of broadening one's consciousness. Actually, the living entity's most important symptom or the manifestation of the spirit is in the consciousness. It is the consciousness that makes a living entity a living entity. When the living entity becomes unconscious, then there is no awareness whether he is a living entity or not, whether he is alive or not, whether he is or not. So, according to the Vedic understanding, the maximum amount of importance has been given to consciousness. And according to the degree of the consciousness, living entities' situation has been determined. Those who are in a very, very lower state, a very, very degraded state of consciousness, they have been considered to be low class or lower grades of living entities. And those who are in a very elevated state of consciousness, they have been considered to be the higher living entities. And highest of all living entities are the Brahmanas. Because a Brahmana has developed his consciousness to the fullest extent. It has been very scientifically described that the consciousness, there are five different stages of consciousness. The lowest one is called Achhadito Chetan. Achhadito means covered, and Chetan means consciousness, Chetana. So those who are in a state of covered consciousness, they are the lowest. And the trees and plants fall in that category. They are conscious, but their consciousness is so much covered that it seems as if they do not have any consciousness. Then above that stage of covered consciousness is the shrunken state of consciousness, shankuchito chetan. Shankuchito means to be shrunken. And the living entities, starting from the worms and insects to the animals, fall in this category. Birds, beasts, everything. From the insects or the worms to the animals fall in that category. And then the third stage of consciousness is known as Mukulito Chetan. Mukul means a bud. And the third stage is the bud state of consciousness. And the human beings fall in that category. The bud, although it is in a shrunken state, a bud is shrunken, but the bud has ability to bloom. The same way, although apparently a human being is in a shrunken state of consciousness, but a human being has the ability to develop his consciousness. Apparently a human being is also an animal. The shamanam etad, poshubhi shamana, aharo nidra bhayamaitu nancha. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending, these are the animal propensities. And they are also there in the human beings. And as long as a human being is motivated by these four propensities, he is also in an animal platform. He may have the body of a human being, but his consciousness is like that of an animal. But when a human being becomes spiritually motivated or takes to spiritual life, then that bud of consciousness begins to blossom. So apparently a human being is also like an animal, also in a shrunken state of consciousness. But a human being has the ability to develop his consciousness, make the bud blossom. Now, for a bud to blossom, it needs two things. It needs the rays of the sun and it needs water. So it has been described that when a human being makes an endeavor to develop his consciousness, by the endeavor of Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Athato Brahma Jigyasa means Inquiry about the spiritual truth. Inquiry about the absolute truth. Now, in order to approach that platform, one needs, or in order to develop his consciousness from the bud to a blossom, bud to a flower, it needs the water and it needs the rays of sun. And it has been described that the guru is the water and the sun is the, and Krishna is the sun. Krishna Surya Samo Maya Hai Andhukar. Often in Vedas, Krishna has been described, Krishna has been compared to the sun. So when a living entity under the proper protection and guidance of a guru is exposed to Krishna, then his consciousness begins to bloom. And that is the fourth stage of consciousness known as Vikoshito Chetan. Vikoshito means to blossom. When a man takes the spiritual life and his consciousness gradually begins to develop under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master being exposed to Krishna, then he begins to become Krishna conscious. So that is the fourth stage of consciousness known as the Vikoshito Chetan. And when one becomes fully Krishna conscious, when one becomes a pure devotee, when one becomes situated in his spiritual identity, then it is the fifth stage or the ultimate stage of consciousness known as Purna Vikoshito Chetan, or fully bloomed consciousness. So this is how the living entities gradually progressing towards the ultimate spiritual goal. Now, the natural course is to reach that point. If there was no detrimental interference from the nature, then living entity would have gradually developed. Like in the subhuman species of life, the growth is very systematic and uninterrupted. By the arrangement of nature, living entities are gradually evolving from the lower state of consciousness to the higher state of consciousness. It's a natural process of development. From covered consciousness to the shrunken state of consciousness, and gradually developing to the animal platform, and then ultimately getting a human body. That is the arrangement of nature. But when one gets the human body, then he is given a chance to decide for himself what he wants to do with this human body, what he wants to do with this wonderful facility, how he wants to utilize this wonderful facility, to become more involved in matter or to free himself from the material bondage. Now, the Vedic society was very systematically designed to enable one to reach that ultimate goal of life. Like those who are born in a mode of ignorance. Actually, everyone was born in the mode of ignorance. Everyone, janmana jayate shudra. By birth, everyone is a shudra. By birth, everyone is born in the mode of ignorance. But sangskarat bhavati dvija. By the purificatory process, that is, by being surrendered to a bona fide spiritual master and receiving the transcendental knowledge from him, one becomes a dvija, a twice born. And then the gradual evolution was, he becomes twice born, that is, his second birth, he receives his second birth, the birth of the spirit, the awareness of the spirit, awareness of the spiritual identity. And then, vedopathat bhavet vipra. By studying the Vedas, one used to become a vipra. Just getting the initiation is not enough. Initiation was just the entrance to the transcendental school. And in the school, we have the course. And the course is the Vedas. So one was supposed to study the Vedas, and by studying the Vedas, he used to become a Vipra. And Brahma Janati iti Brahmana. And then by realizing that Vedic knowledge, one used to become a Brahmana. There is a difference between knowing and realizing. Knowledge is a matter of perception through the senses and receiving it in the mind. But becoming fully aware, becoming fully conscious, or assimilating it and digesting that knowledge is called realization. It is actually, that's the word that has been used. One is knowing, and the other is actually digesting. You may know that the food is there, that is the knowledge. But when you eat the food and digest the food, and food is transformed into energy, then it is realization of the food. So Vedic knowledge is one thing, but realization is another thing. Just knowing is not enough. It's a matter of realization. And what is the realization? Realization means understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the realization. In India, there are many people, those who know the Vedas. They study the Vedas from their childhood, and they can recite shlokas very eloquently. They can recite shlokas, quote shlokas, and they can defeat anybody in arguments, and so on and so forth. But they do not have the realization. Scholarship is one thing, but realization is another thing. And if the scholarship doesn't culminate into realization, then that scholarship is useless. Srinivas Acharya, Srivas Thakur, told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once, when Mahaprabhu was Mahaprabhu did not manifest his devotional sentiments or devotional attitudes. Before that, he was a great scholar, a great logician, and he would defeat anybody and everybody. You all know that Mahaprabhu, at the age of 14, he defeated the greatest scholar of India, Keshav Kashmiri. Mahaprabhu was only 16 years old at that time. And he defeated Keshav Kashmiri. He was such a powerful scholar, he was such a great scholar and such a powerful logician, that when people heard, the scholars of Navadvip heard that Keshav Kashmiri is coming, they, in order to save themselves from the disgrace of the defeat, they ran away from Navadvip under different pretexts. He was such a great scholar that people were just running away from him. And Mahaprabhu was 16 years old at that time, just a young boy. And he defeated Keshav Kashmiri even without entering into an argument with him. Mahaprabhu just asked him, when Keshav Kashmiri challenged him, Mahaprabhu said, "Look, I'm not qualified enough to fight with you. It's better that I listen from you. I receive the knowledge from you." So Keshav Kashmiri said, "Tell me what you want to learn, what you want to know." Then Mahaprabhu said, "Please glorify this Ganges." Mahaprabhu was sitting on the bank of the Ganges teaching his students. So Keshav Kashmiri started to recite. Extempore, Keshav Kashmiri composed 100 verses glorifying Ganges. And it has been said that those verses was as sublime and as vibrant as the flow of the Ganges. They're flowing, those description of the glorification of the Ganges, or description of the glories of Ganges, were flowing in the same way the Ganges is flowing from the mouth of Keshav Kashmiri. And Then he asked Mahaprabhu, how did you like this? Mahaprabhu said, fine, it's quite nice, excepting a few mistakes here and there. So Keshav Kashmiri became furious. He said, you are just a little boy. Do you know who I am? I mean, you are trying to find faults in my composition. No one has ever been able to find any fault in my composition. So he started to blast Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, chastise Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he asked, tell me what is the mistake? And very humbly, Mahaprabhu picked up one shlok, the 65th verse. And in one shlok, Mahaprabhu pointed out five different mistakes. And Keshav Kashmiri was completely defeated, knocked out. So this is how great a scholar Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. And he was such a expert logician that he would challenge everybody. And he would literally turn everything upside down. He could make the truth appear to be a lie, and a lie appear to be a truth by his logics. And then Srinivas Thakur told Mahaprabhu, Sheishe Vidyar Phal Janiho Nishchay, Krishna Padopadde Jana Chitta Vritti Roy. Try to understand that the ultimate goal of knowledge is to develop sincere attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. So then Mahaprabhu said, yes, that will happen. If you bless me, that will happen. He told Srivas Thakur, so please bless me that I become a devotee of Krishna someday. And so this way we can see that ultimate goal of wisdom, ultimate goal of knowledge is to become a devotee of Krishna. So there are brahmanas, those who are caught up in gathering knowledge and performing different rituals. And they are very much absorbed in those activities. But they are not the real brahmanas. Prabhupada has very clearly pointed out who a brahmana is. Actually, this verse has pointed it out, who an actual brahmana is. And it's been pointed out that these are the eight different qualities of a brahmana. Sama, sense control, dhamma, sama is the mind control, dhamma is the sense control, then truthfulness, satta. And Prabhupada in the purport described that word, satta, very specifically, as satta actually means to reveal the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas. If satta is not just telling the truth, but to reveal the ultimate truth, that's the business of a Brahmin. To reveal the truth to the world. Know what is the absolute truth. So that titiksha, samadama satta, mercy, anugraha, and then comes titiksha is there also, tolerance, and then tapasya, austerities or practicing penance, and tolerance, that is titiksha, and then anubhav means feeling. Now real realization comes from it's a matter of actually feeling. Feeling is from the heart. And anubhav means feeling it. Like knowing Krishna in the heart. Krishna is truth. Krishna is not an imagination or an abstract concept. The abstract concepts can be perceived in the mind. But the ultimate realization comes from feeling it in the heart. And so the ultimate consideration of realization is the anubhav. knowing the Lord in the heart and knowing one's own identity as he is as a spiritual entity. So this is how a Brahmin becomes, or a living entity becomes situated in a Brahminical platform. Prabhupada actually wanted to make a society of Brahmanas. Prabhupada wanted that this ISKCON is the society that will produce Brahmanas. This age of Kali is making everyone into a Sudra, turning everyone into a Sudra. Ashuddha Shudra Kalpahi Brahmana Koli Shambhava. In the age of Kali, even the Brahmanas will become impure as the Sudras. So that is the position of a living entity, a human being in this age of Kali. But Prabhupada actually came to reverse the cycle of Kali, reverse the influence of Kali. Kali is turning everyone into a Sudra, and Prabhupada came to turn everyone into a Brahmin. It's a struggle. It's a struggle between Kali and Krishna. It's a struggle between Kali and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. And Krishna's representatives, Krishna's devotees, Mahaprabhu's devotees come to counteract that influence of Kali. And Prabhupada came and did it very expertly. The way Krishna comes himself, and in this age, he came to distribute his mercy. And that is one of the most important qualities of a devotee, is that he is merciful, he is compassionate. And when he sees that the living entities are suffering, then he becomes very much afflicted. We have seen, we know, that Lord Buddha came, or Krishna came as Lord Buddha, because he could not tolerate the suffering of the living entities. Because Lord's heart is very soft, and he can't tolerate the sufferings of his children, his living entities. And the suffering is hinsa, violence. Prabhupada defined violence as the obstruction to one's natural development. Naturally, everyone is developing towards Krishna consciousness. And when somebody causes some impediment to that natural development, that is himsa. And so the subtlest form of violence is that a living entity is not allowed to become Krishna conscious. And Kali is doing that. As I mentioned earlier, every living entity is naturally progressing towards Krishna. Every living entity is gradually becoming more and more conscious. And if there was no such impediment, then gradually the living entity would have become Krishna conscious, naturally. But in this age, because of the influence of Kali, the Vedic culture has been destroyed. And that's why people are completely bewildered, and their natural progress to Krishna is being hindered, obstructed. So Buddha came to stop the gross form of violence, animal slaughter. But Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to stop this subtle form of violence. And that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has been described as the most munificent incarnation of the Lord. Anarpita charin chirat korunayavatirna kalo. He has appeared very mercifully in this age of Kali in order to bestow upon the living entities that has never been bestowed before. A kind of mercy that was completely unknown to the living entities before. In order to distribute that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared. And what is that? That is samarpayitum unnato jalo rasan shabhakti sriyam. His devotion in the most elevated and most brilliant mellow. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give it to us, And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's for, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give it to us, and that's why he has been considered to be the most munificent incarnation. And Mahaprabhu's devotees are even more munificent than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, devotee and the Lord are competing with each other constantly. That who can love whom more? The devotee tries to love the Lord more, and the Lord reciprocates by giving him, offering him more love. Then the devotee offers him more love. So this is how a loving competition begins between the Lord and the devotee. And the same thing applies with the mercy. The Lord gives his mercy, but the devotee becomes even more merciful to the conditioned living entity. That's why we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and he distributed Krishna consciousness all over India. But he predicted that someday somebody will come and by his mercy I'll be defeated. Like this mercy that I distributed all over India, and because of that I have been addressed as the most munificent incarnation. Someday somebody will come and defeat me, and he will distribute it to everybody all over the world. In every town and village, the holy name would spread. That was Mahaprabhu's prediction. And then that personality came, the most wonderful devotee of Lord Chaitanya, the most wonderful associate of Lord Chaitanya. And he has distributed this love of Godhead all over the world. So much so that he is converting people into brahmanas, those who never even heard the word brahmana before. Before Prabhupada came, no one actually knew what a brahmana actually meant. Or they never even heard that word. And there, by Prabhupada's mercy, people are becoming such elevated brahmanas that they are converting others into brahmanas. So that is the transcendental quality of the Lord and his devotees. The transcendental quality is that they are like touchstone. Like whoever comes in contact becomes transformed. The touchstone has the quality that when it's touched with a it touches a base metal like iron, aluminium, iron, brass and copper and so on and so forth, those metals turn into gold. And that's what is happening by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotee, Srila Prabhupada. That's what is happening. Like all over the world, people are turning into gold. And actually, it's quite significant. Yesterday, Sachinandan Prabhu was talking about Plato's divisions of society and in Republic. And the highest class of the society has been termed as gold. And they are actually the brahmanas. I mean, that's the understanding. And by coming in contact with a pure devotee, the grossest, the basest, the most degraded people even become gold or brahmanas. So this is the mercy of a pure devotee. Not only a pure devotee, Prabhupada was not just a pure devotee. Prabhupada was one of the most intimate associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This can be analyzed this way. Out of Mahaprabhu's servants, there was Govinda. Govinda was very, very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and served Mahaprabhu very sincerely. One, Govinda used to massage Mahaprabhu's feet when Mahaprabhu laid down after taking his lunch, prasad. And one day, Mahaprabhu laid down just on the doorway to his room, And he blocked that, he actually blocked the door, and Govinda could not enter. But Govinda had the service to massage Mahaprabhu's feet, and Mahaprabhu was asleep. So what Govinda did, he put his chadar, he put his bohirvash cloth on top of Mahaprabhu's body, over Mahaprabhu's body, and he stepped inside, because it is considered to be offensive to cross over the body of a superior. What to talk about Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he massaged Mahaprabhu's feet. And after a long time, when Mahaprabhu woke up, he saw Govinda inside the room. So he asked, "What happened, Govinda? You didn't take lunch today?" Then Govinda said, "How can I go out? You just blocked the door." And Mahaprabhu said, "You could have gone out the way you came in." So Govinda said, "No, I could come in order to serve you. I can commit offenses. If even in order to serve you I have to go to hell because of committing offenses, I don't mind. But for my sense enjoyment, I do not want to commit any offense. So I could come in to serve you, but I can't go out to eat." The same way. So this is a kind of a service, the body service, serving Mahaprabhu, Bopu. Then there is another kind of service. The Haridas Thakur served Mahaprabhu very wonderfully, served Mahaprabhu's instructions. Mahaprabhu came to distribute the holy name, and Haridas Thakur chanted the holy name 300,000 times, 300,000 names every day without fail. So that's another kind of service, serving Mahaprabhu's vani. But then there is another kind of servant. Rupa Goswami wanted to stay with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because it's a natural desire for a devotee to stay with the Lord. But Mahaprabhu said, "No, you go to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, you write scriptures and preach Krishna consciousness and discover the lost places of Krishna's pastimes." And then this Rupa Goswami once came to Jagannath Puri. And Mahaprabhu, during the Ratha Yatra, was singing a song in front of Lord Jagannath. That song says, "Ja kaumaro haro shayebo hi barustad, ste chaitra khapa chon milito maloti shurabhayo prouda kadamba nila." That the person who stole my heart when I was a young girl, that person has become my husband today, my lord today. But still and it is the same. And the full moon night of spring, and the gentle breeze is blowing from the old kadamba tree, carrying the fragrance of Maloti flowers. But still my heart is yearning to go back to the bank of Reba River under the Betoshi tree. So Mahaprabhu was singing this song in front of Jagannath, and no one could understand why Mahaprabhu is singing such a mundane song. And only Swarup Damodar understood. And then after the Ratha Yatra festival, one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Rupa Goswami. And at that time, Rupa Goswami went to take a bath in the river, in the ocean. And Mahaprabhu saw a palm leaf was stuck on the ceiling of the hut. And he pulled it out, and he saw a verse has been written by Rupa Goswami. And that verse says, "Priyo shoyayam kurukshetra milita." My dear Sakhi, my dear friend, I met Krishna again in Kurukshetra. And it is the same I, Radha, But still my heart is yearning to go back to the bank of Jamuna in the forest of Vrindavan that is filled with the fifth note of Krishna's flute. So this is the counterpart of the song that Mahaprabhu was singing. Now Mahaprabhu never told Rupa Goswami anything. But Rupa Goswami understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart and wrote that verse. And Mahaprabhu became very, very happy. And when Rupa Goswami came back, he slapped him on the back out of affection and started saying, "Rupa, how did you get to know my heart? How did you?" And showed it to Swarup Damodar, "See what Rupa wrote. Now tell me how he got to know my heart. How he got to know the what was going on in my heart. I never revealed it to anyone." And then Swarup Damodar said, "You must have bestowed your special mercy upon Rupa. Otherwise, who can ever understand your heart?" And that is another kind of servant. Like who understands the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when we see categorically, then we see that above Govinda's service is the service of Haridas Thakur. And even above Haridas Thakur's service is the service of Rupa Goswami. The most intimate service. And of all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, I mean, who is the greatest? Who understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart the best possible way? In every town and village, this holy name will spread. Mahaprabhu predicted, Mahaprabhu came to distribute the love of Godhead, irrespective of any consideration, anywhere and everywhere. And who did it? So who understood Mahaprabhu's heart the most wonderful way, most profound way? And that is Srila Prabhupada. And that's how we can understand that Prabhupada is one of the most intimate associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is because of our spiritual blindness that we cannot see him today. But someday when our spiritual eyes will open, then we will be able to recognize, we will be able to see who Srila Prabhupada is. So at least we can understand that we are extremely fortunate, that we have come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, we have become a part of his movement. Now let us also try to understand Prabhupada's heart. And that is what brings us close to the personality. If everybody wants to come close to Prabhupada, and that coming close to Prabhupada is not an external consideration. It is not a physical consideration. Whether we have been initiated by Prabhupada, whether we had personal association of Srila Prabhupada, or so and so forth. There are many devotees, those who have been initiated by Prabhupada, but they are not even in ISKCON today. Or in Krishna consciousness today. There are many devotees, those who serve Prabhupada physically, coming in very close contact with Srila Prabhupada. But actually, surprisingly, most of them actually left today. Isn't it? Most of Prabhupada's body servants actually have left the movement. So that is not the consideration. How close physically one came to Prabhupada. Actually, Prabhupada gave an example regarding that. He says a bed bug is very close to your body, but what it does, it simply harasses you, bites you. So let's not become bed bug. Prabhupada wanted that every... Then only we... Any question?
And he says, all over the world are the most magnificent. And at that point,
Mahaprabhu started shouting, "Bhurida, Bhurida."
You are the most magnificent. So, directly kind of relates to Sri Prabhupada.
Right, that's true.
He came.
Yeah, that's a very good analysis. Yeah. Thank you.
You know, call it a conjecture or anything, but it appears that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, because you were saying that last time he was saying that somebody's going to come after me and do what I didn't do. I don't know where that's from.
No, it's just, you know, like elaborate, that elaborating that shloka.
It's
actually
also, this verse can be elaborated.
Right, right, yeah, sure. Yeah. Was that? I couldn't get the point. Who? Yeah. Well, that's true. And Prabhupada often gave the example of, you know, there's a shower and the whole world is flooded, but, and if you're thirsty, just standing on the shower is not going to quench your thirst. You have to receive the water in your palm and drink it. So that endeavor we have to make. But because of our material attachments, we do not do that. Because we are too much involved in our material entanglements. So that's why we cannot really detach ourselves from that material entanglement, lift our arms and cup our hand, palms, and drink the nectar. That's the problem. Mahaprabhu's nectar is flooding the whole world, but we are still not able to drink it. So that, you know, like, we have to become detached from, we have to give up that propensity to enjoy the material nature. Because we can't really have both. We can't maintain our material attachments at the same time have Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work. Like the example can be given about the marriage party going in a boat. And in the morning they saw that they didn't make any progress. And they finally found that the boatman forgot to pull the anchor. So he was, although he was going through the process of rowing the boat, but the boat didn't make any movement. So we may go through the process of rowing the boat, may go through the process of, you know, process of the rituals, performing the rituals of Krishna consciousness. But if we do not lift the anchor, then we won't make any progress. The first thing is to become fully convinced that this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can bestow us the ultimate benediction. And if we just give up all our attachments, subtle and gross, and just surrender unto Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representatives, then we'll be immediately taken into the other region. But actually, because of our attachments, because of our doubts, because of our offenses, we cannot pull that anchor. So that's why it's very important that we pull the anchor. And that's why it's so important to associate with the devotees favorably. Because when the devotees get together, then they empower each other. The way Sanatan Goswami was begging Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to empower him, the devotees empower each other by their association. So it's very, very important to associate favorably with the devotees. And then the progress will automatically happen. We may be very, very degraded, very, very fallen, but other Vaishnavas are very elevated. And if I just somehow or other become linked up to them, then I will also make progress. And that's why Prabhupada gave this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to associate with each other so that we can reach the ultimate goal. The lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are some people, those who actually don't want to see that ISKCON grows. And I won't call them devotees. I mean, I would say there are some envious people. And some people even think that they pray that ISKCON is destroyed. So that's, who gives a damn about what they say? ISKCON is going to go on. The question is whether we are going to be linked up to ISKCON. The way Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Gaudiya Math is going on, actually Gaudiya Math is going on through ISKCON. The same way ISKCON will always go on. Prabhupada's ISKCON will always go on. Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement will always go on. But the question is whether we will participate. And what Prabhupada started, is that the absolute point? No, Prabhupada started it and Prabhupada gave us a chance to further it. The way Mahaprabhu came and gave the holy name, but he wanted his devotees to come after him and further that movement. The same way Prabhupada also gave us. Prabhupada fulfilled Mahaprabhu's prediction. Now Prabhupada is giving us a chance. Now you all further it. In every town and village, I didn't complete the work. I left something for you all to do. So there will be always something left by the spiritual master for his disciples to do. And let us learn from the previous mistakes. Gaudiya Math made mistakes. Even in ISKCON we made many mistakes. And learn from those mistakes and push on this movement. Yes, Pratap? Every town and village means every people in every town and village should have a chance to become Krishna conscious. Right? There may be not only one temple in each village, there may be many temples in each village. Like nowadays we see, it's not very difficult. I mean, Christians have their churches, but 2-3 churches in every village. So why can't Mahaprabhu's movement spread so much so that in every village we'll have few temples? Ramananda?
Who is actually this personality? Is that an empowered jiva?
Yeah. He's an empowered jiva. His business is to spread adharma in the age of Kali. And he has been described, karala badana krurha kalishcha kalaha priya. His karala badana, his face is very vicious. And kalishcha kalaha priya, and he is very fond of fighting. He is very fond of quarreling. And that's what Kali is doing to us. That's another thing, like wherever there is fight, you can close your eyes and say that Kali is trying to enter here. So that's why devotees always avoid fights. Prabhupada said that nothing can destroy this movement from outside. Only from inside it can be destroyed. And how will it come? It will come in the form of fighting, internal quarrel. Gaudiya Math was destroyed. I wouldn't say destroyed. If some Gaudiya Math people hear that, they won't like it. And Gaudiya Math broke into pieces, the mission, they lost their mission because they started to fight among themselves. Soon after Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, they started to fight among themselves. Not only soon after, actually it started even before that. I heard once, actually it's Krishna's Babaji Maharaj, a very good friend of Srila Prabhupada, told me once. One day, you see, during Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, he also gave the sannyasis kind of areas to preach and collect. So one sannyasi went to preach in some area, and then he thought that since I've come so far, might as well go to the next village also, which was not in his zone. He went into some other sannyasi's zone. And he preached and he collected some donations. And then these two sannyasis met in Gaudiya Math, in Chaitanya Math in Mayapur. And they were fighting very bitterly. They're quarreling with each other. Why did you come to my zone? And so the fight started. And so then all of a sudden they saw Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was standing at the door. He just stood there, didn't say, he just kept on watching them. And then when they saw him, he stopped. They stopped and offered obeisances. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I don't blame you for this. I blame me. I blame myself. He said, Mahaprabhu made the kings into beggars, and I picked you up from the streets and made you live in big, big palaces. So naturally you'll start fighting today. Naturally you'll become the agents of Kali. It was so heavy. And actually the fight started even before that. They were fighting about who will get the biggest room, who will get his territory, and if somebody encroached into others' territory, then there was fight. And I heard from another godbrother of Srila Prabhupada that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very disturbed that the fight started. They're fighting among themselves. And that's one of the reasons why he left this planet. So at least let us not do that. Yes, Purushan. That's a nice concern. Yeah, this will happen, you see. Krishna consciousness is very new to the West. It'll take time, some time. And also another thing is, you see, for last few years, we have not really been preaching. We have not been preaching. We have been collecting, we have been maintaining ourselves, but we haven't been really preaching, and that's why it's not making progress so much. But during Prabhupada's time, in 10 years' time, Prabhupada preached so much, so that there were over 100 temples all over the world, and there are thousands upon thousands of people took to Krishna consciousness very seriously. But after Prabhupada left, in last 10 years, what did we do? Like, the momentum was tremendous after Prabhupada left. Everything was booming. 78, 79, 80, 81, everything was booming. But then the decline started. Actually, everything was booming because it was the momentum from Prabhupada's preaching that was going on. But we started applying the brake. And that's why it came to a standstill practically. So we have to pick up the spirit of Srila Prabhupada, revive the spirit and push on with sincere dedication. And then only it'll spread. Mahaprabhu's movement is very, very potent. What did Prabhupada do? A single-handed, a man alone, 70 years old, no friend, no money, went to America, didn't know whether he is going to have anything to eat there. So he just carried a bag of chipped rice, flat rice with him, not knowing whether there'll be anything to eat in America, and started the movement. And in 10 years' time, what he did. And what did we do? So many of us, thousands of us. So I feel that we must get our act together now and try to spread this movement all over the world. Then only our joining this movement will be fruitful. Instead of fighting about petty possessions and petty material profits, I think I'll stop now. So anyway, we'll have plenty of time.